Hello. 2024 has been an eventful sporting year for our teams, players and athletes alike. In the next hour, we'll look back at Cambridge United's rollercoaster year and the highs and lows of Gary Monk's first 9 months in charge. We'll also reflect on the beginning of two new eras at Cambridge City, and we'll go back to the summer to relive Imogen Grant's Olympic gold medal win, plus much, much more. My name is Daniel Baker, and you're listening to Rewind 2024 Sport.
Cambridge Radio.
We start with football, and Cambridge United began 2024 with back-to-back defeats and with Neil Harris in the dugout. And then in February, this happened.
Some breaking news. It's just being reported that Cambridge United head coach Neil Harris is set for a sensational return to his former club Millwall.
Later that day, his sudden departure was confirmed. Some supporters questioned Harris's loyalty, while others didn't blame him for rejoining his old club. Matt Lockwood was more unhappy about how Harris left rather than the fact that he did.
Well, I think it was very underhand on the way it was done. I think there's a little bit of skullduggery gone on behind it. I don't blame him. I just don't like the way it's been done.
Harris's last match in charge was a 2-1 defeat to Bolton, which took place less than 24 hours before the Ewes made the formal announcement. In his final interview, he said that they were positive despite the result, but didn't give any indication that he was leaving.
We gave a really good account of ourselves. So my only disappointment is that the second goal was a really good goal. Unbelievable ball and finish. The first goal was really poor by us. You know, you can't play against the best side in the league and get beat by a set play.
Barry Corr was put in caretaker charge with Kevin Betsy while the Ewes began searching for their third permanent manager of the season. Corr was linked with a top job but ruled himself out early on.
So one day I definitely want to do it, but at this moment in time I'm happy where I'm at. I'm gaining experiences.
The bookies' favourites to replace Harris included the likes of Simon Grayson, Michael Duff and ex-Ewes player Gary Rowett. And Stephen Page couldn't resist asking Corr if Mark Bonner was in the frame.
There's a job currently going at the moment. Any chance of him coming back?
Seriously, Stephen, you're asking me that? You'll have to ask Ben Strang on that one. I'll refer that to Ben.
But in early March, Harris's replacement was finally announced. Step forward, former Swansea, Leeds, Birmingham and Middlesbrough boss Gary Monk, who signed a 2-year contract. Questions were asked about why he'd seemingly been out of the game for nearly 4 years, but he defended his track record and his decision to wait for what he described as the right opportunity. What brought Monk to the Abbey?
I was trying to find an opportunity where, how do you say this, but like something that's got a bit of stability in the ownership, that has a plan in their mind of where they want to go forward, but a realistic plan as well. And I think that's kind of very difficult to find in the landscape of football now. So that's been part of the reason why it's been quite a while. But then this come along and that married up to what I was thinking and what I'm looking for. So that's why I'm here.
The new head coach was pleased that his first game in charge would be at home, and it ended in a 1-1 draw with Northampton Town.
But I can't complain. The players were great. And I've always said it, if you can't win a game, you make sure you don't lose. And I thought they did everything to make sure they didn't lose that game. And yeah, we can be bad, but that first half's a really good example of what they're capable of.
This was followed by a 6-0 hammering away to Lincoln City and a 4-0 drubbing at Reading. But then the Ewes had some new life of their own over Easter and recorded impressive victories at Barnsley and at home to Wigan. They missed the chance to ensure safety in their penultimate game of the season against Wickham, but they got the job done on the final day with a goalless draw at Port Vale. United finished on 48 points in 18th place.
I think you can see clearly from the game there was a team playing without pressure and there was a team playing with pressure, especially early on, which was expected. But I thought we stuck at it, and then second half, we did what we needed to do.
The rebuilding began over the summer, and the most high-profile departure was club legend Harrison Dunk, who left after 11 years.
Playing at Wembley is amazing. Getting promoted at Wembley is obviously amazing, and it was such a big sort of step for the club, and myself personally just becoming a Football League player. I guess that was such a long time ago now, but the other memories probably are currently more special to me in the sense that, for example, the Newcastle playing at St James, at Paxton James's, was obviously amazing. Can't ever take that away. The lockdown sort of promotion was amazing.
Defender Kelland Watts was the first of 13 summer signings.
Coming to a club like Cambridge, I think it's that perfect opportunity for me to be somewhere permanent and really stamp my authority on it.
The last to arrive was striker Danan Lundalu, who signed on loan from Bolton on what was a somewhat otherwise uneventful transfer deadline day.
I spoke to the gaffer, had a good meeting with him. And everything just felt right. So, you know, we had a great interaction between each other, and I feel like we're already quite close.
Consultations also took place about a new club crest, and the Ewes choice of kits for 2024-25 also got fans talking. Their white and blue away strip, which took inspiration from Lilies on the River Cam, divided opinion, and some even said it looked like a plate from a particular chain of pubs. The U's also went to Portugal for a pre-season training camp and beat the likes of West Brom, Braintree and Ebbsfleet in friendlies, and the publication of the fixture list also got the supporters excited.
Cambridge United will begin the new season with an away trip to newly promoted Stockport County on August the 10th.
That game at Edgeley Park was broadcast live as part of the EFL's historic new TV deal, but the Amber Army were beaten 2-0. Pressure began to mount on Monk following a poor start to the new season, which saw them pick up just 1 point from their opening 10 league games. That came courtesy of a 4-4 draw with Blackpool, but despite their bad results, Monk always backed his players.
With them, it's like their attitude's been spot on from day one. Do you know what I mean? I've never have a problem with them, the way they go about the work and their attitude towards it.
The speculation was fuelled further by United's 1-0 home defeat against Rotherham in early October. Ahead of their next game with Exeter City, Monk insisted that his focus remained on the task in hand.
It is strange because I don't think, yeah, I've never been in a period for this prolonged. I don't think many have. Do you know what I mean? But the job is to shut the outside noise off, concentrate on what you are doing well, keep believing in yourselves, keep pushing the players as hard as we can, and trust that it will turn. In terms of the narrative, I can't control any of that, so don't ever worry about it.
The U's were beaten 1-0. Scotty McGeorge was among the fans who attended.
You can lay and present the facts and the stats, and they look pretty damning, to be honest with you. And as I say, Cambridge United aren't a trigger-happy club by nature. We had a lot of upheaval last season. As I say, with the international break, it would be interesting to hear from the board's point of view how they feel.
The following day, the board spoke out.
They're asking supporters to keep backing them, and that while injuries have been a problem, they know results need to improve quickly. They've also defended manager Gary Monk, insisting they know how hard he and his staff and the players are working, and that they will use the international break as a chance to regroup.
And on October the 19th, the U's fortunes changed, and their first win of 2024-25 came against familiar opponents, Wigan, who they beat 2-0. U's fan Gary Atters was impressed by what he saw.
The attitude of the players from the first second of the game, and that press that they had, Kachunga, Brophy, Smith, the two lads up top, Loft and Dan were brilliant. So yeah, it was a really good, and to get the goal early was a real lift for the fans and for the team.
United followed that victory up with another a few days later. This time they beat Stevenage by the same scoreline. And then a late goal from Jordan Cousins against Burton Albion made it 3 wins in 7 days.
I knew the ball was coming in from Dan, and I just tried to position myself somewhere where, you know, the ball might ricochet out. And I was lucky enough to put myself in a similar position to where I scored my last goal last year. So, yeah, like I said, lucky to put myself in that position and be composed to finish.
Here's football analyst Tim Armitage.
It is kind of unbelievable. I think a lot of fans were, certainly after the Wigan game, were shell-shocked. And then Stevenage in the week, they were even more. But going home after a game, I'd forgotten how nice it is to go home happy because you've won, because it's been such a long time. And, you know, we couldn't really see a way out of it. And all of a sudden,
further victories over Woking in the FA Cup and Chelsea's under-21s in the EFL Trophy extended their winning run to 5 without conceding. Monk was even nominated for October's Manager of the Month award. But then came the crash, a 6-1 drubbing at Peterborough, which left the U's reeling. Here's their captain, Michael Morrison.
We didn't cover ourselves in glory at all. It was a really, really disappointing day. We've sent a lot of people home unhappy, and the performance was very disappointing.
The rest of November brought 3 creditable draws and an FA Cup exit after a 2-1 defeat to Wigan. And they began December with another heavy defeat, this time against Reading, followed by a 4-1 home win over Shrewsbury. Off the pitch, the U's were named as the best-run EFL side in this year's Fair Game Index football survey. Their foundation have held several fundraising events too, and have worked with the charity Pledge United to try and stamp out discrimination and violence against women and girls. CEO Alex Tunbridge has also further outlined his vision for the club, which includes redeveloping the Abbey Stadium.
We know planning is going to be about 6 to 8 months. We're very close, I think, to pressing the button on that 6 to 8 month process. Having everybody lined up in the background and getting everything ready to do that as efficiently as we possibly can do, and standing the most chance of success in terms of the planning process, is probably why we've held a little bit on what we're doing.
A planning application is set to be submitted next summer to expand the ground's capacity to approximately 12,000. Adam Webb has also sold his 10% stake in the club, which means that Paul Barry and Mark Green now own 75 and 25% of the U's respectively. Former midfielder Liam O'Neill completed his first year in charge of the club's under-18s in December.
It's been like a massive learning curve throughout, which it's going to be, because you come off the back of playing, you think you know the ins and outs of football, but it looks slightly different when you're coaching, sometimes hugely, sometimes just a slight difference. But no, I'm really enjoying it.
And in 2025, the youth kits will look even smarter with a new Evolution logo on it. This was the crest that was chosen following consultations and feedback. On Monday, November the 18th, Cambridge City Football Club made a huge and long-awaited announcement.
Cambridge City will finally move into their new ground at Sawston this month. For the past 11 years, the club has been ground-sharing with Heston and St Ives. The Lilywhites will now host Tilbury in the Isthmian North Division on Saturday the 30th of November.
Despite the setbacks on the project, there was still a huge level of excitement ahead of their first match at the Forward IP Community Stadium. These fans were thrilled to see the club back in a ground of its own.
Been supporting them since I was 7 years old. Been a ball boy, done the tannoy and just various other jobs, you know. And it's just a great feeling to be our own ground again, really.
It's just amazing to get back to the olden days.
We're saying we've been ground sharing with Heston and St Ives, which we're grateful for, but this is just an amazing day.
We've obviously been to Heston and St Ives, and obviously we've got our own ground now, so it's just amazing.
And Neil Midgley was among the club legends who attended the official opening.
I think I'm City through and through now. I finished my playing career at Cambridge City, and I'm now still in football. Now that's great, and it's nice to see Cambridge City come through into their new home.
And who has the honour of being the first player to score a goal at the ground? And that could be a quiz question in years to come. The City went down 2-1 in the end. A defeat probably wasn't part of the script for their big day, but General Manager Alice Dewey was pleased to see a big turnout of almost 1,500 fans.
It was incredible. Seeing that amount of people in here felt amazing. If we can get that many people every game, it would be incredible, and we can go up and beyond from where we are now.
The move to Sawston represents the start of a new era for the club, but another one came to an end in the summer.
Robbie Nightingale has stepped down as manager of Cambridge City today by mutual consent. Nightingale made more than 350 appearances as a player for the Lilywhites before moving to the dugout in 2016.
It feels a bit sad, perhaps, that Nightingale never got to lead his beloved club out at Sawston, but he's been told he's always welcome. But the path leading up to their former player and manager's departure had been a rocky one. Lilywhites spent the first half of 2024 stuck in a relegation scrap and were on the wrong end of some heavy defeats. One of them was a 4-1 loss at AFC Rushden and Diamonds, and Nightingale didn't hold back in his post-match interview.
No one really stood up and was counted. And, you know, we looked very vulnerable from set plays and any ball that was in the box. You know, our clearances, they've got two throws that they can throw into the box from either side, and we're gifting throw-ins 20 yards out so they can launch it into our box. And, you know, it just, all in all, it's a bad day at the office.
Injuries also played their part, and the management were always trying to bring in reinforcements. But a familiar face did answer their SOS. Defender Johnny Hurd, whose arrival was chaotic, to say the least.
I was taking my mum to bingo on a Friday night, so I wasn't home. So he wasn't able to sort out the paperwork, so I actually had to drive to one of the director's house at 11 o'clock. Well, it was earlier than that, actually. It was sort of early morning to sign the papers, and then I got signed on just before 11, which I think was the deadline. And then, yeah, I was obviously in the starting team at 3 o'clock on the same day.
The Lilywhites ended the season with an 8-game winless run, but survived despite a 2-1 defeat to Leigh Town on the final day. That result meant they finished 17th in the Northern Premier League Division 1 Midlands, but they'd done enough to stay up on goal difference. Neil Midgley, who was assistant manager at the time, said he hoped his side would be able to put their somewhat disappointing campaign behind them.
Myself personally, I've been here since we were at Step 2, so I know where this club's capable of going, and I'm sure that's going to be the aim for the football club in the coming years. So yeah, it should all be positive from now on, hopefully.
But the club did win some silverware and beat Wisbeach 4-0 in the final of the Cambridgeshire Invitational Cup. Jamie Cureton was appointed as the Lilywhites' new manager in the summer.
I like to play attacking football. I like to be entertaining. I like my team to have energy, work rate, pace, power. You know, I like us to play on the front foot, and I like us to play football. You know, I understand that certain games you can, and certain times of the season, it might have to be a bit more defensive and change stuff, but I'm very adaptable.
Their boss brought in a whole new squad made up of players he worked with at his previous clubs. Fan favourites Taylor Parr, Stan Leach and Mikey Davis all left, but Cureton insisted he was doing the right thing.
We'll hopefully be in and around 10 players that hopefully then will give us a base, and then the rest we can sort of work on as we go. But it is tough because you're coming into a group that you don't know. Location of where players were recruited for the league they were in to now being in a different league. So you tend to probably not keep majority of the squad. So you're then starting near enough from scratch.
The 48-year-old also restructured his coaching staff and brought in Jim Duggan as assistant manager. The Lewites were also transferred to the Isthmian League North Division over the summer. City's first game of the new season was an FA Cup match with Lakenheath, which they won 5-1, but they were knocked out in the next round by Great Yarmouth.
We've not turned up on the day, so yeah, it's bitterly disappointing that we can't give the owners back, you know, a financial sort of cushion and give them some money back that what they're putting in, and obviously on the fans as well, who've travelled, you know, a long way to Great Yarmouth, and we've let the club down.
City's 3-1 triumph at Mildenhall in August was the first of four wins that they managed in their opening 10 league games. Their victory over the Hall was followed by a trip to Cureton's former employers, Maldon and Tiptree. City were controversially denied a point after a late equaliser was chalked off in a 2-1 loss.
I just felt that we were cheated. You know, yeah. For me, you can't let a whole phase of play and probably another phase of play go on and then call it back. And I think that they were influenced by the bench. But fair play to the boys of scoring a goal in the last kick to make it 2-2, which then gets stripped.
The Lewites have also done well in this season's FA Trophy and pulled off a giant killing against Step 3 AFC Sudbridge to set up a first-round tie with Royston Town. They lost 2-1, but their runners earned them some much-needed cash. But they've struggled for consistency in the league so far, and there have been frequent comings and goings throughout the last few months. And one of their former players found himself joining the Villa in the summer. Josh Oyinsan won the ITV2 hit show Love Island with partner Mimi Galube. Remains to be seen, though, if the winger will couple up with the Lily Whites again one day. Cambridge Radio.
For a while there it was rough, but lately I've been doing better than the last four cold Decembers I recall. And I see my family every month. I found a girl my parents love. She'll come and stay the night, and I think I might have it all. And I thank God every day for the girl he sent my way. But I know the things he gives me, he can take away. And I hold you every night, and that's a feeling I wanna get used to. But there's no man as terrified as the man who stands to lose you. Oh, I hope I don't lose you. Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God. Don't take these beautiful things that I've got. Please stay. I want you, I need you, oh God. Don't take these beautiful things that I've got. I found my mind, I'm feeling sane. It's been a while, but I'm finding my faith. If everything's good and it's great, why do I sit and wait till it's gone? Oh, I tell you, I know I've got enough. I've got peace and I've got love. But I'm up at night thinking I just might lose it all. You, I need you, oh God. I need these beautiful things that I've got.
Benson Boone and Beautiful Things. You're listening to Rewind 2024 Sport on Cambridge Radio with me, Daniel Baker. At the end of 2023, Histon chairman John Hall set the club a target.
Step 3 in 5 years is the plan. So,
do you think that's achievable?
Yes. Next year, once we're in the playoffs, not a promotion spot. If not, then the following year is to get promoted.
And this year, manager Chris Nunn has gone about trying to execute his plan, and there's evidence to suggest that they're on track. It took them until February to win their first game of 2024, which was a 1-0 home triumph over Amesbury Rovers, which they followed up with a 2-1 victory over Easington Sports. League results were picking up again, but Nunn wanted his side to focus on the Cambridgeshire Invitational Cup and go for some silverware.
The importance of a cup run is huge for us this year. And, you know, we're in a semi-final and we want to win it. You know, we know there are some good teams in there. We know Wisbeach away on a Tuesday night. It's going to be really hard. But you're not going to get to a cup final easily, are you?
But they lost their semi-final to Wisbeach Town on penalties. However, they bounced back and managed four wins in their next four games, which effectively secured their safety for another season. The first of those victories came at Bridge Road against Lutterworth Town, and the club gave half-price entry to women and girls to mark International Women's Day. The initiative went down well with these fans.
I think it's really encouraging to get more women and girls down to support the club. So, yeah, good idea.
I just think it's great for inclusivity and to inspire the next generation.
I think it's a great idea. We come here regularly. Had no idea they were going to do that, but I think it's a really good idea.
Stutes lost 1-0 to Easington Sports on the final day of the season, but it was still mission accomplished. In his first half season at the club, Nunn guided Histon to an 11th place finish, and just four league defeats since the turn of the year meant he succeeded in his bid for survival. But what did he make of his first few months at the helm?
We tried to connect with the supporters. Again, I thought we did that. And we tried to just sort of put a freshness and a bit more youth into the team. And over the season, I thought we got better and better, really. So we almost sort of wanted the season to carry on for another month or two. But at the same time, we were probably ready for a rest because it took a lot of effort and hard work to get where we wanted to get to come the end of last season. But I was really pleased. And the welcoming as well from the board, the supporters, was really good as well. And I felt we connected with everybody. So in reality, it probably couldn't have gone any better. It would have been nice to have won the Cams Cup at the end of the season.
Histon began reshaping their squad over the summer, and the most notable arrival was a familiar face. Striker Matty Allen rejoined for his third stint. Their pre-season, though, was disrupted by match cancellations, meaning they didn't play their first friendly until 2 weeks before the new season started. Nunn also set out his aim for 2024-25.
I do believe we've got a competitive budget. You know, it's like I say, it's by no means, you know, in the top two or three, anything like that, but it's still competitive enough, I believe, to get a side together that we want to try and make the playoffs.
Captain Max York added that promotion to step forward mean more to him than any of his personal ambitions.
I think with the staff and the management and everything that's come in and the way that we've set up, everything that's been done at this club has been big changes, and we just do not deserve to be at this level. And hopefully, ultimately, just to go up, if it means any shape or form, I would take that all day over anything else.
The Stutes were slow out of the blocks, though, and won just one of their first eight games in all competitions at the start of the new season. A bank holiday Monday defeat to Amesbury Rovers in late August in particular left their manager feeling frustrated.
I've never screamed so much at a football match in my life. We looked unfit. We made three or four changes from Saturday to try and freshen it up. And first half, I thought we did okay, actually. And even the beginning of the second half, we were okay. Just the longer the game went on, I thought we just looked worse and worse.
And the next day, striker Matty Hayden announced his departure and told us that it wasn't his decision to leave.
I would like to make clear that I was happy to stay at the club, and for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out, and I have to respect the decision and wish them all the best, really.
But the Stutes then started to turn things around and were scoring goals even without Hayden. They even managed to hit four in consecutive games against Yaxley and Stowmarket. The boss joked that while he'd love to have a certain Norwegian leading his line, he was taking encouragement from what he was seeing.
Histon can't afford a Haaland, so until that day happens, we'll have to make do with what we've got. But no, on a serious note, we do play in a way that allows players freedom, the chance to express themselves, and we need high energy, and we would like to get lots of players into the box. So for me, you know, the more goal scorers we have, the better.
The 4-1 win over Stowmarket came in the FA Vars. Nunn said afterwards that there was no reason why a side couldn't make it all the way to Wembley after missing out on a cup last term.
You've got a dream, but why can't we have a good run in the competition? You know, we're a good side, we're a good club, and, you know, we play good football, so why can't we go far in the competition, you know? But just at the same time, everyone's going to be saying exactly the same as us.
Nunn has regularly spoken about his policy of giving youth a chance and has promoted several youngsters to the first team throughout the year. He's also had to make tough decisions, and one of them was releasing goalkeeper Sam Roach, who made more than 250 appearances for the club. Almost a year to the day that he took charge, Nunn took his side to face old foes Daventry Town in October and won 2-0. That result has made up for what happened in his first game as Histon manager, which was a 5-0 defeat against the same opponents. In November, they started to push towards the playoffs with three victories out of a possible four in the league. And one man who was backing Nunn to succeed is former Stutes captain and midfielder Rogan McGeorge.
When I look at them as a club, they're certainly a club that deserve to be higher than where they're at the moment. But yeah, loads of respect for Chris and certainly think he's the right man to take him to the next league.
In women's football, Cambridge United made history in 2024 as they beat the likes of Barnsley and Maidenhead to reach the final of the Women's National League plate. They lost 3-0 to Derby County in their first ever National Cup final, but head coach Darren Mardram took heart from his side's performance and run in the competition.
So proud of them. All I kept saying to them all yesterday, all today was, you can have all the plans in the world, but if we don't go out there and play with that heart and desire that we're representing Cambridge United, we want to do our best for them, then we can't get anywhere. The plan's not the bit that gets us there, it's the endeavour. So,
in the league, a 2-2 draw with Chesham on the final day in May secured a respectable mid-table finish. The club also had to find a slot to replay their home match with Norwich City. The original game in January was abandoned late on with a score at 3-2 to the visitors due to an injury to defender Brooke Chill-Ferris. Thankfully, she recovered and even scored in the rearranger match, even though it ended in a 4-2 defeat. There's some good news too for club legend Liz Pamplin, who received an outstanding contribution award from the FA in recognition of her hard work. Over the summer, Mardram began strengthening his squad and was happy with his transfer business.
We've recruited fullbacks and central midfielders, and really it was about bringing in people that had experience as well, because we lacked that at times last year.
They started the 2024-25 campaign with 3 wins from their first 8 games, but suffered a double blow on the opening day of the season. The Ewes lost 1-0 to Actonians and midfielder Sarah Wiltshire got injured. But the Ewes have been able to host matches at the Abbey Stadium again this season. Dulwich Hamlet were the first visitors, and Pamplin said before the game that she hoped they'd be able to play there more regularly.
The reason why we're at St Neots is because of the level of football that we play at. You have to have a certain level of ground.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cambridge in the city itself doesn't really have that level of ground. And obviously we'd love to play at the Abbey, but it's like quite a large ground when you're still building up your fan base.
But they lost 2-0. However, they fared quite well in the domestic competition so far in 2024-25 and caused something of an upset in FA Cup qualifying. They beat Real Bedford 3-1 just 2 weeks after taking points off them in the league, much to their head coach's delight.
We talk about the goal scorers, but Lauren Webb in goal pulled off two of probably the best saves I've ever seen live. And that's what you expect your goalkeeper and your defence to go and do in front of them. So, yeah, good team performance all the way through. I'd say it was pretty much near perfect.
Sarah Wiltshire, who was back from injury by this point, was among the scorers that day. Their reward was a home tie with Norwich City on November the 3rd, but they lost 1-0 to bring their run to an end. The hopes of reaching another plate final were also dashed by Bournemouth in early December, but in their next game they beat Actonians 5-1. Elsewhere, Cambridge City Ladies' 2-1 victory in the Charity Shield over the Ewes in April was a small ray of light in what proved to be a tough 2023-24 campaign which saw them relegated. But this season, their young side's run to the first round of the FA Cup has put some smiles back on faces. Meanwhile, Histon Ladies are continuing to raise their profile, and manager Kevin Jacklin and their players were also guests of honour on International Women's Day. The Suits have been mounting a promotion push in the first half of the 2024-25 season. Elsewhere, Cambridgeshire referees Abigail Byrne and Nicoletta Breer are among the officials for the 2024 Women's FA Cup final at Wembley. The 150th men's varsity football match took place in March, but Cambridge were disappointingly beaten on penalties by rivals Oxford. Cambridge's women, though, did get bragging rights in their game, which ended in a 3-0 win. Coming up shortly, we head to the French capital and look back on the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Stay tuned. Radio. You're listening to Rewind 2024 Sport on Cambridge Radio with me, Daniel Baker. The Olympic opening ceremony in the summer featured performances and appearances from Lady Gaga, Celine Dion and Snoop Dogg. But the real stars of the Games are the athletes, and rower Imogen Grant from Cambridge was one of Team GB's standout performers.
Cambridge rower Imogen Grant has won gold at the Olympics in Paris in the final of the women's lightweight double sculls. The 28-year-old and her partner Emily Craig raced superbly, and Grant is the first Cambridgeshire athlete to get a medal at this summer's Games.
3 years on from her heartache in Tokyo, where she missed out on bronze by the finest of margins, Grant won her first ever Olympic medal, and it was one of the 65 Team GB took home. The 28-year-old and her partner Emily Craig breezed through their heat, the semi-final and the main race itself. Before the Olympics, the former Bar Hill resident told us she'd been working hard to move on from her disappointment in 2021.
I think this Olympiad, the past 3 years, have really been informed by that loss and making sure that we do it justice and really putting it behind us as we lead into the next Games.
Imogen initially took up rowing at Trinity College after signing up to join the boat club in exchange for 2 free drinks during Freshers' Week. But back to Paris, and how did Grant and Craig feel going into that final race?
Well, a couple of hours before, after we'd weighed in, Emily was actually feeling really nervous and threw up because of the nerves. So I think we both had a bit of a giggle about that. It's not completely uncommon, but yeah, when it does happen, it's mostly just something to laugh about because it means that we're ready.
But those nerves were soon banished, and once they pulled ahead in the final race, the result never really looked in doubt.
We were getting closer and closer to the finish line, and suddenly the red boys came in, which is the last 250 metres, the last eighth of the race. And I knew that we had enough margin that even if the Romanians, who are our main competition, sprinted to high hell, then I think we'd still be fine. So I just knew that we just needed to not make any mistakes.
The pair crossed the finish line in just over 6 minutes and 47 seconds, and Grant paid an emotional tribute to her partner afterwards.
Emily is the toughest, most incredible person I've ever had the pleasure of rowing with. She took me from a clueless single sculler who did not know how to row a double to an Olympic champion, and she's been there every single step of the way. When I've had my wobbles, when I've had my ups and downs, I kind of wanted to just go out and do it all over again.
Grant completed her medical studies and qualified as a doctor prior to Paris and started a new job in a Slough hospital soon after her medal-winning race. On her first visit home since the Games, Imogen looked back at her sensational summer in our Cambridge Sports Special programme.
I'd realised we'd actually won, and we'd actually done it this time. We hadn't done a photo finish, we'd made sure of it. All of those feelings rushed back in of the enormity of what we'd just done and just achieved. I mean, it sounds really cheesy, but it really was achieving 2 childhood dreams in 2 weeks, a gold medal and being a doctor.
And she was honoured by Trinity College, who created a large wooden replica medal which was hung on the statue of Henry VIII. And that's not all.
They also painted a set of blades gold for me, and they had projected my face up during the Olympics onto the front of Trinity Great Gate. So being able to see all of that in person and see what it meant to them as well as everybody else was really, really special.
Imogen also skipped another prize after Paris, but this time it was a different colour. She won the 2024 BBC Green Sport Awards Athlete of the Year and spoke at the Labour Party conference. And she saw gold again in the autumn when she got married to round off a sensational year. And Grant has also inspired people to take up rowing. The Hornets Rowing Club launched in Erith on the back of her success. Another Cambridgeshire athlete took home a medal too. Peterborough's Jake Jarman won a gymnastics bronze in the men's floor event. Elsewhere, swimmer Anne Harrod-Evans revealed what her ambitions were ahead of her Olympic debut.
A medal would be a dream, really, but, you know, that is really, I guess, pushing it. You know, anyone can get it. It's like in the mix. But just seeing how far I can progress, you know, semi-finals, finals.
And while she may not have won a medal, Evans exceeded expectations by reaching the final of the women's 100-metre breaststroke. The 21-year-old from Little Abington got through the heats and semi-finals and was in third place at the halfway stage of the medal event. But she fell just short, although her performance was very impressive, and it's no disgrace to lose a race which features Olympic and world record holders. Elsewhere, Cambridge trio Tess Howard, James Albury and Gareth Furlong all missed out on hockey medals despite their strong individual performances. Howard said in the build-up to the Games that her Great Britain side would be aiming high despite the fact they qualified for Paris by the skin of their teeth.
We've medalled at the last 3 games, so I'm sure everybody will be expecting the Team GB, you know, since Tokyo to medal. And it's something that is a dream of ours as a group.
Team GB's men's and women's teams both got knocked out in the quarterfinals of their respective competitions. Cambridge graduate Hannah Snellgrove and former Stephen Peirce teaching assistant Bethany Shriver were also among the Team GB athletes at the Olympics. And at the end of August, the Paralympics got underway and Cambridge's Johnny Peacock competed in his 4th Games. He won gold in 2012 and 2016 and bronze in Tokyo, but missed out on a medal this time in the T64 100-metre race. But the last word on Paris goes to Imogen Grant, who is an Olympic champion forever in her rowing category.
It was absolutely amazing. Watching my teammates win medals the next day in the 8s was also fantastic. It was really satisfying to come back as a rowing team with a bang and come away with 8 medals, 3 of them gold.
Up next, we continue our rowing theme with a look back at the Oxford versus Cambridge boat races. Stay tuned.
Time stood still, just like a photograph you made me feel. Like this will last forever, looking in your eyes. I see my whole life. They say you know it when you know it, and I know. Oh, promise that you hold me close, don't let me go. Can't help but feel so lost. I wanna give you all I've got. They say you know it when you know it, and I know. Promise that you'll hold me close, don't let me go.
Miles Smith and Stargazing. You're listening to Cambridge Radio, and this is Rewind 2024 Sport with me, Daniel Baker. In 2023, Cambridge managed a rare clean sweep in the boat race against Oxford. While they didn't quite repeat last year's heroics in 2024, the light blues still have the bragging rights. The build-up to the race was dominated by the levels of E. coli that were discovered in the Thames, and Oxford even claimed there'd been an outbreak in their squad. Organisers urged rowers not to jump in the river after the race as a precaution. Men's president Seb Benzaghi felt their opponents would be out for revenge, and so did women's coach Paddy Ryan.
I think they're going to be very hungry. Their body language to the crew announcement was very determined that they were going to beat us, and, you know, maybe they will. I hope not, but we're going to hold to our values that we've instilled over the year, and that is the sort of the culture and the ethos of how we train.
But how are the squads shaping up? Brian promoted five reserves from 2023 into the main crew and added some international experience to his ranks.
Megan and Hannah are our two internationals. Megan comes from the Duke University in the United States and was the US under 23 gold medalist last year. Hannah was a Cox at the University of Syracuse, their first eight Cox for several years, and is just the right person for this group of women. Yes, it's an exciting group.
Women's president Jenna Armstrong was among the familiar faces selected, and ahead of the big day, she said that Cambridge could achieve back-to-back clean sweeps.
I definitely think it's possible. I definitely think it's doable. And from what I've seen on both the men's and the women's side, I mean, the boats have been moving unbelievably well. So, I mean, I definitely think it's a real possibility.
A men's coach, Rob Baker, had faces old and new in his lineup.
Yeah, we've got a little international flavour on our side. So we've got five returning blues into the blue boat, which is great. And we've got coming in there, Aussie stroke Brit, and he's got a sort of dual national and an American as well. Also, Cox has come in from the States, but he's a Brit, but he coxed at Harvard for the last 4 years. So, yeah, some good guys.
Benzaghi was one of the returnees for 2024, and this year was his last ever boat race. Both the men's and women's races were action-packed, and the women went first. Oxford made a flying start, but were overtaken about 10 minutes in, and the light blues ended up winning by 7 lengths. But at the end of the race, Oxford Cox Joe Gellert was involved in a standoff with umpire Richard Phelps, who'd issued warnings to both crews throughout. Gellert argued that the Cambridge boat had crossed their path, which could have seen the defending champions disqualified. But the result stood, and the light blues made it 7 wins in a row. But what did our Olympic hero and boat race commentator Imogen Grant make of it?
In my opinion, I do believe that Oxford were in the wrong and essentially willfully steered into Cambridge to try and get Cambridge disqualified. And it was a real testament to the grit and determination of the Cambridge crew to not let that upset their rhythm.
Cambridge also dominated the men's race. After some early oar clashes, they pulled ahead, although Matt Edge began to struggle towards the end. But the light blues held on, and so did Edge.
I sort of realised I was first struggling about 10 minutes in, and then sort of as the race developed, I realised that actually it was coming for me quite fast. I was starting to go, but held on for as long as I could. Thankfully, I didn't go quite early enough for Oxford to get back.
Rob Baker's men won by 3.5 lengths to make it 5 wins in their last 6 races, which was made even more impressive given that they were a man down. Looking back, what did Baker, Benzaghi, Armstrong and Ryan make of it all?
To come away with it pretty convincingly is always really satisfying, and to defy the odds is really satisfying. So, yeah, really proud of the guy's performance and very, very glad to win.
It turned into a very kind of unique and memorable race, and to come away with the win was just the most unbelievable feeling, particularly, you know, given that all the other Cambridge men won as well over Oxford. So the reserves, Goldie won, the lightweights won, and the spares won as well.
I mean, the race had everything. It had, you know, being a length down, it had a collision, it had, you know, one crew walking through another. So that was probably one of the more special memories that I think I've had at CBC so far.
Seven of those women I've worked with for two or more years, which we don't get that much of. We did it our way. We're held to our beliefs. We've continued to build on our positive culture. And yeah, it meant a lot because we were the underdogs.
The only crew from Cambridge not to win in 2024 were the women's reserves. And did E. coli play its part? Hugh Pennington is a professor of bacteriology at the University of Aberdeen.
There may be a lot of E. coli in the Thames, but most of that E. coli is quite harmless.
In rugby union, Cambridge began 2024 with just one win on the board and managed just one further victory in the second half of last season. But their 33-14 triumph over Caldy at Grantchester Road meant that they were at least able to treat their fans to a home victory in their debut season in the Championship. The Blood and Sand still had a chance of finishing 10th and avoiding the dreaded last place going into their reverse match with Caldy in May. Director of Rugby Richie Williams urged his players to give it all they had.
We want to make sure that we give a really good account of ourselves on Saturday. There are only two games left this season, and for us, you know, we want to make sure that we get points from this game and then our final game in a few weeks' time.
But late drama saw them lose 31-28 and they rounded off last season with a 37-28 defeat at home to Ampthill. Williams' side were guaranteed survival anyway due to the demise of the Jersey Reds. But he said his team had found things tough.
I think one thing that we know now from the back of this season, I don't want to be in this position again where we're bottom of the table. The players don't. It hurts. It's not a nice thing. And fortunately, we've avoided relegation by hook or by crook. But I think it's invigorated everybody even more and roll on the 1st of July.
2024-25 didn't get off to the best of starts. The season began with a heavy 57-24 defeat to National One champions Chinner, and they were dealt a financial blow. The restructuring of the Premiership Cup meant that the Blood and Sand and their opening day opponents were booted out and have lost out on the riches that come with it. But both Cambridge and Chinner have created their own competition, not the Premiership Cup, where they'll battle it out over two legs for a trophy. Tim Haig is the club's chairman.
We do feel a bit let down by being excluded from the Cup. It's got a financial consequence to us. More importantly, it's left two big holes in our season, and notably a seven-week hole after Christmas, which is pretty tricky to fill at this stage. And we're hoping to generate a bit of local rivalry and a bit of a cup vibe around what we're doing.
They lost the first leg 33-24 in November, and round two takes place in the spring. However, the Williams era has now come to an end and the club made the announcement on December the 20th.
Cambridge RUFC have announced that Director of Rugby and Head Coach Richie Williams will be leaving the club. He'll take charge of the Championship strugglers for the final time next Saturday when they take on the Bedford Blues. The Welshman has been with the Blood and Sand since 2018.
He'll always be remembered as the man who guided Cambridge to promotion from National One in their centenary year. And the Blood and Sand beat Ampthill 13-7 in the Welshman's final home game in charge to give him something of a nice send-off. And there was a sporting first too, as the first ever women's Town versus Gown match took place at Grantchester Road. It ended 5-5. Allegra Sloot played for the Town team.
Yeah, I was just saying to the team that I'm kind of glad that it ended in a draw, because the next time we face each other, it'll be an even bigger game because both sides have something to prove.
Cambridge's women's team won their League Two and went the whole season unbeaten. Over at Shelford, it was all changed this year after Director of Rugby Will Cottrell departed in early January. Club legends Milo Anderson and Charlie Baker, who managed almost 500 appearances for the Peacocks between them during their playing days, took over, and the duo guided their side to a creditable fifth place finish at the end of their first half season at the helm.
I think it was quite positive, really. We had some good results, and the lads really bought in to just getting a positive finish to the season, really. Yeah, I think it was a good finish, really, from where we were.
Yeah, I think it was it's interesting, because when we took the reins, I think halfway through the season, it was still a bit of uncertainty as what was happening maybe this season. So I think a lot of last season was to sort of get through, maybe get some work on little things here and there, which we thought we could improve and impact.
Shelford managed to convince almost all of their senior squad to stay over the summer, including Rob Conquest, who was appointed as the new first team captain.
I think it's massive for me watching, like, you know, Charlie and Milo lead now as coaches, and watch them come through the Colts as well. That was pretty cool. I think it's a real nice family setup.
The 2024-25 campaign began with three wins from their first seven games, and club legend Gordon Worley, who played for Shelford in the 1950s, returned as a special guest for their 37-11 win over Hartford.
First division growing there, isn't it? Look at it, isn't it? I've never seen such a nice ground.
And in 2024, Cantab's head coach Glenn Remnant and club captain Tom Bailey told us how they managed to become, in their words, a sustainable and family club.
We've got very, very good player numbers, and the player registration's growing, which has popped up a little red flag with the RFU, which is really good because we're kind of bucking all the trends at the moment. But we're doing some really lovely things, just taking rugby back to what it was before, Daniel. Very simple foundations of, you know, people, families coming down and enjoying themselves, having a good day out and kind of just, yeah, resetting, recalibrating.
This is really just that sort of coming together of similar interests, people wanting to get together, play rugby, but more than that, you know, make friends, add back to the community, have a bit of a social, you know, expanding the horizons a bit in terms of friendship groups. Yeah, we're just, as Glenn says, we're sort of taking it back to the basics in terms of all the external stuff of rugby.
And several players with local connections represented England. Ben Spencer, Alex Coles, Fraser Dingwall, George Furbank and Max Mullins have all featured for Steve Borthwick's side throughout the year. Cambridge Radio. In cricket, Cambridge had a successful year and won the NCCA Eastern Division 2 in dramatic circumstances. Promotion to Division 1 was secured in their last Red Bull match of the 2024 campaign thanks to a victory against Norfolk in August, which went down to the final day. But the bowlers delivered when it mattered, and James Cox took 7 for 49 as Cambridgeshire won by 82 runs. Head coach James Williams had set his side two goals for the season, a cup win and promotion, but they exited the NCCA T20 competition in the Super 12s and the 50-over NCCA trophy in the semi-finals. One of the defining moments in their season was a victory over Cumbria in one of their three-day NCCA championship matches, which also went down to the wire, as Williams explains.
That's one of the best games of cricket that I've ever seen, to be perfectly honest. The fact that we needed 10 wickets in 13 overs, they needed 87 runs, and we get it off the last ball of the game. It was, you know, that's easily one of the best moments of my Camps career.
Cambridge also played their first game at Fenners since 2018 in June in the 50-over NCCA trophy. And again, they defeated Cumbria to give them a winning return to the historic ground. It's something of a happy place for their head coach.
It's nice to come back and, you know, we've got a few games this year. So, yeah, like you said, it's a really great place to play. I've got some great memories there from playing. So hopefully we can create some more as a group.
And what did he make of their season?
I think we've got a fantastic white ball side as well. And I think we need to come away with something pretty soon. Like I just said, I think if availability had been right, you know, we've had a lot of injuries and things. I think if we'd had our best team available for a little bit longer, then I think we'd have come away with something and we'd have done something special. But you can't complain. We made a Super 12s, a semi-final and a promotion. So you look at it, I'm probably being a little bit picky and a little bit harsh. But yeah, it's been a really good season. I know the lads have enjoyed it.
The club held a showcase match against Surrey in July, but the game was abandoned due to a bad pitch. Many of Cambridge's players were juggling club, county and sometimes even international commitments, which did pose its challenges for their head coach. But one success story was Noah Thane, who was called up to England's under-19 squad for their matches against Sri Lanka in July. Williams was very proud of the teenager who went to school in Cambridge.
For him to still want to come back and play for us and to see him do so well for Essex and, you know, see him do so well for England as well, it's really fantastic. We've got a great number of our youngsters that have kicked on and progressed into first-class cricket, and some of them still come back and play for us when they want some game time, and that's brilliant.
Elsewhere, Sawson and Babraham won the East Anglian Premier League, and Ramsey, Castor and Aylesworth and Wesley were also crowned champions of Divisions 1, 2 and 3, respectively. And there was success too for Fox and Granter, who won the Village Cup final at Lords after beating Dumbleton. In snooker, Cambridge-based Neil Robertson ended his long wait for a trophy in 2024, although this year could be described as a mixed bag in terms of his performances in competitions. The Australian won the English Open in September after beating China's Wu Yizhe by 9 frames to 7. He also reached the quarterfinals of the Saudi Arabian Masters and Northern Ireland Open, and the last four of the Champion of Champions tournament, where he lost to Mark Williams. The German Masters is his first scheduled competition of 2025. Something's got a hold on me lately, though I don't know myself anymore. Feels like the walls are all closing in, and the devil's knocking at my door. Whoa. Out of my mind, how many times did I tell you I'm no good at being alone? Yeah, it's taking a toll on me, trying my best to keep from tearing the skin off my bones. Don't you
dynamism, won't you body like a fiend, like a bad habit. Bad habits hard to break when I'm with you. Yeah, I know I could do it on my own, but I want that real full moon, black magic, and it takes two. Problematic. Problem is when I'm with you, I'm an addict. And I need some relief. My skin and your teeth, can't see the forest through the trees. Got me down on my knees, darling, please. Oh, I lose control when you're not next to me. I'm falling apart right in front of you. Can't you see?
Teddy Swims and Lose Control. You're listening to Rewind 2024 Sport with me, Daniel Baker. In this final part of the show, we celebrate the unsung heroes of 2024 and some sporting achievements that you might not have previously known about. Siobhan Taylor works as an intensive care unit nurse at Adam Brooks, but this summer she swapped wards for weights and became a world champion powerlifter in Texas. But how did she come to take up the sport?
At work, I was looking after a very poorly patient in the neurotrauma unit and just ended up with like a lower back injury. And that's really common for nurses. Back injuries can end nursing careers. And in your usual kind of trying to get yourself sorted and GPs and things, painkillers, I had a chat with one of the physiotherapists that I was working with, and she suggested that I swap a couple of my hours of the gym. I was already doing lots of sort of spin classes, learn how to lift and build my core.
Her competition victory was made even sweeter by the fact she set a new British and Commonwealth record at the same time with a 185kg bench press in the 84kg Masters 1 category. Siobhan talks us through the event.
I actually watched the very last lift. It was a lady from Finland take the last lift, which she failed. And because she failed that, I won. When I came off my last lift, so you get three opportunities to, you know, do your best lift. When I came off my last lift, I actually didn't know what I'd lifted. I had no idea what was on the bar. And so I came off and asked my handler, like, what was on the bar? And they were like, 185. And I was like, shocked Pikachu face. And then I was like, oh, where have I placed? And I had literally no idea where I was at that position or what state the competition was in, because I was in such my lifting little bubble. And my handler said, oh, that's the last lift. And if she fails, you're world champion. There may have been some rich words, but we sat and watched the very last lift. And as I saw her fail it, all of this emotion just poured out of me. If you want to watch the live stream, there's lots of screaming, but it's joyful screaming of realizing that the work had paid off. The sacrifice had been all for, you know, a good reason.
Siobhan said the 2024 IPF World Championships would be the final boss, and a world title would sit very nicely with her British and Commonwealth crowns. But something else caught her eye.
I hadn't even been back from Texas for a week, and my coach said, oh my God, you've done so well. I can't imagine what's next for you. And I was like, I'm off to do the European Championships in 7 weeks, see if I can defend my European title.
And the mum of two did indeed defend that title. In motorsport, Burwell's Ollie Jarvis won the Le Mans 24-hour race for the first time with his team United Autosports. His victory came just 12 months after another Cambridgeshire driver, Ben Barker, managed his first ever podium finish. Jarvis talked us through the race.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling because so much work and preparation goes into this race, and it really is the crown jewel of endurance racing. So it's nice to get the reward for the team who works so hard, but also to be able to put that on my CV as a driver. I have to say the race itself was probably one of the most difficult I've ever been involved in. Changing conditions. So the race started dry, but there was constant rain in and out throughout the 24 hours. And, you know, at night, it's difficult enough as it is with, you know, poor visibility, multi-class racing. But when then you add in the fact that the track was constantly changing and every corner was different on every lap. You know, you'd come round at night. You can't see where the wet patches are, but you knew there could be some there. So, you know, you just couldn't let off for a single moment. You had to stay fully concentrated because one single error could end your race, as it did for many drivers. So, you know, to cross the finish line. Of course, there was joy, but there was also relief in the end.
Cambridge's Rob Huff impressed in the British Touring Cars Championship in 2024, and one particular moment stood out. He won his first race in 20 years at Snetterton. Incidentally, this was the last track he claimed a victory on back in 2004. In American football, the Cambridge Cats had another good season and won 6 out of 10 in the league. Their success owes much to the endeavours of Michael Johnson, or MJ as he's also known, who represented the Great Britain Lions in 2024. Head coach Andy Whiteoak left at the end of the season, and Russ Begbie will take his place as the Cats look to kick on in 2025.
Extremely excited. This is by far in my career the best role for me, and I'm really excited about pushing the Cats team forward.
And two women's sports clubs got bragging rights over Oxford. The Cambridge Rollerbillies got their skates on for the Bout Race, which saw the two rivals go head-to-head in two matches. February Phillips spoke to Amy Gray and Alex Elbrow in the build-up.
Our A team are very similarly ranked, and I think our B team are going to be similar as well. So it's a double header, which is quite unusual. So there's two games between 1 and 5, so you can turn up at any time. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a highly competitive game. I'm hoping we will win, though, based on our recent performance.
The Rollerbillies Punt Rockers B team lost their game, but Cambridge's A team won their match by 161 points to 122. The Cambridge Kodiaks women's ice hockey team have done the double over the Oxford Midnight Stars this year. They beat them 5-2 away, thanks largely to captain Christina Ashley, who scored twice and made one assist.
I think that it went well for us. We're happy with the result. I think we worked a little bit harder than we wanted to initially. We had trouble finding the back of the net, but once we got rolling, once everybody was kind of in sync together and going, it was a really great game for us.
And the Kodiaks overcame the Stars again in November and recorded a 6-3 home victory. And that rounds up the sporting year. I've been Daniel Baker, and you've been listening to Rewind 2024 Sport. Thank you for listening, and also a special thank you to BBC Radio Cambridgeshire, Cambridgeshire UFC, Cambridge United Football Club, the Richie and Jacko podcast, and the Women's Sports Mix for contributing audio to this programme. Let's hope 2025 delivers more sporting success. Bye for now.